Today we'll start in Acts chapter 9, and I'm using two different commentators. One, of course, is Steele Kaufman, but then there was this other, Contending for the Faith, that I found that I've mentioned here a few, a few months ago or so, and I've started mixing. He's come on the last couple of chapters and written some good material too, so I've kind of mixed and matched. But anyway, putting both of their introductions together, we have three pages that I thought that I would start with. But Acts chapter 9 is this well-known account of Saul of Tarsus and how he has been persecuting the Christians, but Jesus gets a hold of him and turns him 180 degrees. So as adamant as he was in persecuting Christians, he's going to be that strong now working for God and for the kingdom of Christ. So this introduction that the commentators wrote is, "This chapter reveals the conversion of Saul of Tarsus, the mighty persecutor, Paul's first ministry at Damascus, which ended in the Jewish plot to kill him, his journey to Jerusalem and depart for Tarsus, a brief summary of the continued growth of the kingdom, and the account of two miracles by Peter, which were the healing of Aeneas at Lydda and the raising of Dorcas from the dead." There are several interlocking patterns in the book of Acts, one of these being seen in Luke's relating various remarkable examples of individual conversions to Christianity, and another being related to the name Christian. As a result, he has three points here. The name bearer of the sacred name was chosen in verse 15 of chapter 9. Number two, the Gentiles in the person of Cornelius and others were formally welcomed into God's kingdom in Acts chapter 10. This is being prophetically revealed as a prerequisite to the giving of the new name from Isaiah 62:2. And we're going to look at these passages later, a different time when they become applicable. And then the third point, at the first Gentile congregation in Antioch, as revealed in Acts 11:26, Paul, the name bearer, called the disciples Christians. And so that's where, when we get to Acts 11:26, that's when we will look at all of these and review all of these different passages and put it all together. Luke does not begin by telling us much about Saul. He will give more information as the narrative progresses. It will be beneficial to have a brief background on Saul, a person who had a great impact on the spreading of the gospel. The following facts of Saul's heritage, birth, and early training serve him well as a preacher of the good news. And they have 5 points here. Saul was a Hebrew of the tribe of Benjamin. As described himself in Philippians 3:5, he was a Hebrew of Hebrews. Saul was a Hebrew as one, he was as Hebrew as one could get, being from a long line of pure Hebrews. Saul's parents were Pharisees. Therefore, Saul was taught the traditions of the Pharisees. Point two, Saul was born in Tarsus, which is in modern-day Turkey. Tarsus was a seat of Greek learning, almost rivaling Athens and Alexandria. It was in the environment of appreciation for higher education that Saul was raised. The third point, Saul was highly educated. As a youth, he was instructed in the highest arts of Greek culture as well as the finest points of Jewish education. In his higher education, he sat at the feet of the most notable teacher of his day, an educator named Gamaliel. Saul described his aptitude for formal instruction in Galatians 1:14 as, "I advanced my Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries in my own nation, being more exceedingly zealous for the traditions of my fathers." And so this high zealousness, as he describes it, explains We know that he did everything in good conscience his whole entire life. He always thought that he was doing correct. Now, Jesus informs him that as he thought that he should be persecuting the Christians, and he thought that that's what God wanted him to do, Jesus informs him that he is, in fact, persecuting the Messiah. So then that helps bring him to repentance. And so he changes, and he changes 180 degrees from that. But he was exceedingly zealous in his studies, and he continued that through his whole life. The third point about Saul. Saul was trained in a trade. Not only does he have the benefits of a formal education, but as customary with every Hebrew boy, he was taught a trade. Saul learned the craft of tent making. The fact that he received an expensive intellectual education proved that his dad put him to this humble trade, not through necessity, but in compliance with the Jewish conception that some form of manual labor was an important part of the education of every boy. The wisdom of this training served Saul well in his subsequent life. He was able to support himself as he was on various missionary journeys, and even in between missionary journeys, he was able to support himself as a tent maker because of this. Even though growing up, Kaufman's main point was, they were able to afford the expensive intellectual education, and so they obviously, he did not have to be a manual laborer because they had a higher economic status, but due to the tradition that every Hebrew boy should learn a trade, his dad educated him also in the trade, at least of tent making, and it served him well in his future years. And then the fifth point, Saul was a Roman citizen. Saul declared he was born a Roman citizen to be a citizen of the Roman Empire, carried with it certain rights and privileges that proved to be a very important asset to Saul. So just repeat these fine main points. Saul was a Hebrew of the tribe of Benjamin. Saul was born in Tarsus, which is in modern-day Turkey. Saul was highly educated. Saul was trained in a trade. And Saul was a Roman citizen. Any questions or comments on anything up to this point? Yes. Yes. That stopped the Roman soldiers in their tracks whenever he told them that. Otherwise, he was going to be who knows how badly beaten or killed, who knows what, but that stopped the beating instantly when he let them know that he was a Roman citizen. And then of course the soldier, and this, I don't think this was a centurion, but anyway, we'll just say the Roman soldier said, well, I bought my Roman citizenship. And then Paul said, I obtained mine from birth. I was born a Roman citizen, which was much higher than if you had purchased it. If you'd purchased your Roman citizenship, you were a lower status citizen. So he had the highest degree, and that scared the soldiers then. So they backed off completely and had to reassess the whole situation then. So yes, the being the citizen and learning the trade of tent making really came into prominence here in the future for him. Now they gave a background history of about Damascus and the Roman Empire here. Regarding the chronological placement of this event, starting in Acts 9, Saul's journey from Jerusalem to Damascus took place in 37 AD, which was about the year which Tiberius Caesar died and Caligula rose to power. We are inclined to be a little surprised at the authority exercised by the Jewish hierarchy in so distant a place as Damascus. Of course, the Sanhedrin exerted over the Jews in foreign cities the same power which they exercised at Jerusalem. However, it was the death of Tiberius leading to a loss of Roman control of Damascus during the reigns of Caligula and Claudius, which made it possible for the arrogant Sanhedrin to pursue their goals with such latitude at that particular time. It is not certainly known just who ruled Damascus during that period, but the eclipse of Roman authority for a time is proved by the fact that no coins with the image of Caligula or Claudius had been discovered there, whereas many have been found with the image of Augustus or Tiberius who preceded them, and many with the images of emperors who succeeded them, thereby leaving a gap. This is the evidence that during those two reigns, Rome had no authority in Damascus. So what the explanation here is, explaining why did Paul have authorization to go and persecute really anybody being in the Roman Empire to Damascus? Or why was Damascus chosen as a city to go instead of some other place? Well, the explanation that I had never heard of before, but I was glad that they did research, and we got a historical evidence that sounds as good as any reason that I wouldn't come up with any reason other than that, and I've never heard any other explanation. But the explanation was that the previous Caesar, Tiberius, had died, and somehow they lost, Rome lost control over Damascus during the reigns of Caligula and Claudius. And the evidence of that is that there are no coins with Caligula or Claudius found, but they had the Caesars before that and the Caesars after that. So the gap of these two Caesars, they've never found any coins. And so that is a great explanation that Rome did not have any power or authority over Damascus during this time, which Rome would have stopped. They would not have allowed anyone to go in and slaughter, at least at this time, slaughter any individuals, imprison them, kill them. They wouldn't have allowed it. They would have stopped that because they were more for peace among their citizens. They didn't like any uprising. Any uprising that there was, they would stop it quickly. Now, I'm about to read here a couple of sentences, a short paragraph, that Rome gets control later, which is mentioned here in the subsequent Caesars, that Rome gets control once again of Damascus, and then Rome comes in and starts to really kill the Jews. This is before 70 AD. I'm going to say probably like 65 AD, something like that. Things, the environment really changes. And but as far as to finish up on this background in history, the synagogues that's mentioned here at the first part of chapter 9 indicate a large Jewish population in Damascus. Josephus told how the citizens of Damascus came upon the Jews as barbarous slaughterers and cut the throats of 18,000 Jews. This shows that the Jewish community in Damascus was very large, and these massacres took place during the Jewish wars, he says, before 70 AD. I wish he'd have given us more precise, but I'm going to say just before 70 AD, maybe something like 65 to 68 AD. And so the thought here that Kaufman had is to let us know there was a large Jewish population, and the evidence of that is some 30 years or so into the future of Acts 9, there were so many Jews that 18,000 were able to be slaughtered. And 18,000, just to give a perspective for us, that's the 20,000 is the number that I've heard. It was years ago of the population of Altus, 10,000 civilians, and then 10,000 military personnel at the Air Force base. And so being 20,000 is what I've heard in Altus. So this would be like the entire city of Altus getting slaughtered by an army, by the Roman Empire. So it was a substantial number of Jews that they took out. So this was a large population, and so there were Christians that were sprinkled in that were trying to teach the Jews about the good news of God's kingdom, and that's who Paul was going after. And now with the Rome not having any authority over Damascus, that was a prime location to go and try to decrease the number of Christians during this time. Any questions or comments on any of this?